Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
January 2nd, 2020.
All right, let's go.
Okay, who are you?
Benny Elliedots, who are you?
I am Jim Jams, and welcome to Why Is Cats, the only podcast on the internet where we talk about the movie Cats exclusively.
For anyone that hasn't listened, we saw the film. We went in unarmed with any information. We were blown away. Mm-hmm. We were confused. So we thought we'd go back to the source. Let's watch the West End musical.
And we decided to bring someone along with us. We've brought another Jellicle cat along with us today. Can you please introduce yourself?
Hello. Alexi. I love the movie.
We've got a movie cat.
Yeah. I'm a movie cat. Yes,
musical I love cats. The movies.
Cinematical cats.
Alexi Toliopoulos from Total Reboot.
Yes.
And Finding Drago.
Guys,
welcome.
Thank you for having me on this beautiful adventure down the... I feel weird. I don't know what to say. I feel upset a little bit. I feel strange.
Well, this is great. These are the emotions we want to tap into.
I have an extremely tingly body right now.
Yeah.
My body's all tingles.
I've seen many emotions from you over the years, but I've never seen you that genuinely uncomfortable. It's and just, genuinely, like, I could see your skin crawling.
You compared it at one point to Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah, it's got that feeling. Like, I think the greatest success of what this piece of art, it's undeniable this is art, by the way. This is art. I would never deny that this is art. But that what it does very successfully is that it does capture that feeling that you've stumbled across something, that you've like, oh, I found this secret society of cats and this is all fucked up and what they're like and it stinks and whatever, you know.
So for the people listening at home or in the alley or if they're Gumby cats by the fire, we forced Alexi to watch the movie first.
Yep.
And then to just sit down with us and watch the West End production of it, which was filmed, I don't know when. But
I think 1998.
1998, beautiful time, just before Phantom Menace came out.
So the world is ablaze right now. There's people waiting in line
before
to see
Jar Jar.
Phantom Menace.
Before Jar Jar, there was Rumpelteazer. So we forced you to watch the Blu-ray version of the West End production with us. Now, let's go to your film experience first.
Yeah.
Tell me about watching Cats in the cinema. Did you know anything about it before you went in?
Well, I knew Memory. I know the song. Yeah. I think that's a beautiful song. I like that song.
Yeah.
And I knew that it was a musical about cats.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what the plot was. I didn't know like, oh, it's a
neither do we.
I kind of thought it was like, if anything, I was like, oh, it's going to be like Oliver Twist because it's English or whatever.
It's going like to be a little orphan cat.
Yeah. That's what I thought it would be like. A little
like Oliver and
cat.
Company.
Yes. Like Oliver and Company, the Billy Joel musical for Disney, the Disney animated Billy Joel musical. I thought it kind of like that because I was like, oh, it's like in English shit. The English story is always a little orphan or whatever. You know, it's a musical. They're all about orphans. Like Annie and Oliver. It's kind of what I thought it was going to be.
Isn't Annie American?
Yeah, I know, but it's, you know.
It feels British.
It feels English because it's old. All old stuff is English, in my opinion. But, you know, I didn't know anything about that. Like, I knew it was Andrew Lloyd Webber. I knew that Mrs. Sheffield had decided not to pick up Cats, and it was his greatest regret in The Nanny.
Oh, so that's all okay. Like, I didn't really? Even know
yeah.
that.
So he, like, you know, that's that everyone goes, oh, you didn't pick up Cats. He goes, it's singing Cats in an Alley. Why would I pick it up? Yeah. And I didn't know any jack shit about all that stuff. But I kind of want to see it because the trailer really captured my attention. Sure. When the trailer came out, I'm like, this is something. This is.
What was your initial reaction to the trailer? Like, did you have a visceral emotional response, or was it just, this looks, you know, fucked up. I'll check that out.
Pure fascination, I think, in that kind of way. Like, I love the idea of midnight movies. Yep. And also with you, Cam, like, we've reviewed movies like Valerian and stuff where I'm like, I love an ambitious
speed racer.
Mm-hmm. Like, I love an ambitious disaster or ambitious creation. I'm like, when I see something like that, I'm like, oh, I'm excited because I know that I'm going to be like fascinated and raptured by it kind of thing. Yeah. Like, you know, movies like Valerian and Speed Racer, they feel like movies from like 100 years in the future that have somehow ended up in like a Blu-ray player now. And so like-
But do you see them as like spectacular failures or-
No, those two in particular, no. I'm just like, oh, that's, I don't know. I can't look at them with like the objective lens. I'm always like, oh, this is so fascinating. I don't, in the process of me being fascinated is enough alone for me to fall in love with the movie. So I'm like, this one looks like an instant midnight movie. Like, this looks so insane and so fascinating. Like, the way this thing put together, and it's based on this like iconic musical. It's kind of like the last, it's the last like iconic stage musical that has not been turned to a film, apart from like, you know, contemporary examples like Hamilton and stuff. Yep. So I know that's why Tom Hooper did it. Mm. And I was interested for it for all of those reasons. The cast was fascinating, like Jason Derulo and stuff. like all of it on paper, I'm just like, this is so my shit. And I think that if anyone that has listened to Cameron and I review movies before, they would definitely like take the bet. The easy bet would be like, Alexi will love this. Cameron will be bored and detest it.
I completely thought that you would fall in love with this.
And I was bored the entire time.
That breaks my fucking heart.
You know how upsetting that is for me to just not be like, oh, what a joyous occasion that I found the new crazy movie that I can watch 100 times.
So what were you bored by? Was it the dance sequences?
The movie.
The trailers.
I was bored. The trailers were all right. It was like the new James Bond and stuff.
But
like
this is what I can't understand, because we were literally on the other end of the spectrum. In I couldn't have been less bored. I want to study every frame of this thing. Mm. So why were you?
I don't know. That's
it?
What I find fascinating is like this. And I don't know. The miracle of this movie is that it's truly one of the more insane things ever put to freaking film, and like a mainstream way, millions of dollars. One of the more insane things. But I was bored the entire time. Like, from the minute that like she flops out of that car, I'm like, oh, okay, here we go. But I think as well, like, you know, I didn't have the experience that you guys had where you're like, you know, you're in like this, no one has seen the movie yet when you're seeing it. Like, this is like a true moment of discovery. You're those people walking in and discovering the cats mucking around stuff. But I think like, if I saw it probably a week after.
So there'd already been like negative buzz out there.
There'd been the negative buzz, but there's still, that was enough for me to go like, oh, I can't wait. I'm excited. But I went with my partner, my best friend B, and we were like, I'm like, these are great people to see this crazy movie with. It's going to be fun. And we went to like a session that wasn't full in a small cinema at Palace Leichhardt. Nah. And there was two other people like our age, a couple. I'm like, they're here the same as us. This is going to be great.
Yeah.
We can talk or whatever. But then in front of us was like this old Grisabella type. Like, this lady that's come by herself. She's enraptured by it. Like, her arms are swaying around.
What? She was dancing?
She was like in her chair. She's like getting involved. She was getting her life.
Really?
Energy was coming from the movie.
Mouthing along to lyrics.
Well, I could only see the back of her head, but you know, she was, her arms were waving.
Alexi, she was Jellicle. You witnessed the Jellicle person out there in the wild.
I saw her get it taken up into the sky. Old Deuteronomy, when Judy Dench stared at her, this woman disappeared, leaving just her coat behind.
She's speaking specifically to me.
But like, you know, this, you know, I couldn't even, like, you can't heckle the movie if someone's getting getting their life. That'd be so rude.
Of course.
So I just like had to go on Twitter and stuff like that. And just like, I need to talk about this. This is a traumatic experience.
See, this is the thing. I think the movie succeeds when you have the room to kind of yes. not sit there rigid as though what you're watching is rational on any level.
Because it's irrational. It's completely irrational.
It's completely irrational.
And I think that I do think that this does have a future as a midnight movie. Like yeah. I will stand by that. I think that, that in a future, if the rights don't become weird or if like people don't become really ashamed of it and they can like embrace it for what it is, this will make money for years and be in cinemas forever.
Yeah. I'd like to hope that too. But then there's the, it's exactly what you just said. If people don't become ashamed of it, the star power in this movie is so big that someone could bury it.
Yeah.
It could never get released after its cinematic release.
Every person in this movie is at least a semi-intelligent, if not very, very intelligent person. You cannot tell me when they were mincing around in those ridiculous motion capture suits that they weren't completely aware of what they were in. Like that's the thing I'm fascinated by. Like what was the vision in their head?
Well, man,
when Idris Elba's dancing up
Tom
those
Hooper's
steps,
previous film was Les Mis, which was like, you know, a prestige musical.
Yeah. All these movies are prestige. Like the guy has not.
But Les Mis makes sense and it has a plot.
Sure, but they must have been thinking this will be the next Les Mis. Oh, yes. We'll all be nominated for Oscars for these performances.
That's it. You look at the guy's track record. Yes. The guy.
You really think Idris Elba when he was like, I'm the Napoleon of crime.
I reckon it would have been toyed around with. Someone would have said, you know, Idris Elba really gives it his all. Yes. There's a lot of buzz.
Sure.
Because like you look at everyone's career, but Tom Hooper especially is like the guy earning his prestige. Like he did that John Adams HBO, which is like this austere drama, whatever, Paul Giamatti, freaking president shit. And then the next thing is like King's Speech wins an Oscar for King's Speech. Yeah. And it's like the most
and
Oscar
gives Colin,
movie.
Colin Firth his Oscar.
Gives Colin Firth his Oscar. Gives Jeffrey Rush one last great movie before he died. Allegedly, whatever happened to that guy, I don't know. And then he did that Danish Girl, which was like another prestige Oscar. That's him. Okay. Or maybe Les Mis was before that. But you know, these are all prestige Oscar. And they're all so calculated to go like, yes, this is going to feature a transformative performance from a major star in some way that's going to get them that Oscar buzz. And it like, you know, the first, you got Anne Hathaway, Paul Giamatti, and Alicia Vikander, like these were all like big performances Colin Firth where it's like, this is going to be one of the most defining performances of their career. They'll win an Oscar, they'll win the Emmy or whatever.
Yeah, but each one of those examples is a person acting in a coherent, cogent project.
A person acting as a person.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, and this comes back to what we've just experienced. We've watched the West End Show, none of the three of us ever having seen it before. Mm. And I thought going back to the source material would provide some kind of logic or coherence to this experience. And I have more questions than ever.
It's not logical, it's logical.
Well, that's why we've got you here, Lex, because on Total Reboot, you and I will watch an original film and then watch the reboot, remake, or ripoff of it. I consider you, and many of your listeners do, one of the critics.
I'm one of the greats.
Well, the great critics who has a uncanny knack for comparing and contrasting
this
text.
Is my Jellicle song.
He's an outrageous critic with an uncanny knack.
It's just me,
for comparing and contrasting text.
I've got a magnifying glass at a Blu-ray.
So we'd love you to help us today, Alexi, compare and contrast the West End production and the film. Can you see if... It doesn't make sense.
No, first, I want you to answer the question first. How could any act, you're saying, talking about this prestige shit.
Sure.
Like, oh yeah, Idris Elba went into this thinking he was going to win a Best Actor Oscar for playing McCavity the Naked Cat. How could a person look at that show and think it was anything other than high camp? And that's not to diminish what it is, but it's not.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know how
he's the wrong guy. Like you can't, he can't make this.
No.
He was the wrong guy from the start to direct this film based on
Do you think only Luc Besson could have made it?
They all look like Luc Besson characters. I think, I don't know who could have made this. Like just some, like, I think
Ben, what you're getting at though, is that I think you're right. I think they would have all seen this film as a very campy, high camp thing.
Yeah.
I think the time we're living in culturally, camp has become so accepted mainstream wise that maybe the thinking was it's time for a big, crazy camp Oscar campaign that's just full of huge performances.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and I could see someone talking Idris Elba and Dame Judi Dench into doing this movie on the back of this will be a big defining role for you and it'll be unlike anything you've ever done.
But you think that they went into it thinking this is going to be genre shifting. This is going to usher in a new
wave. I think
wave
this is
going to
make you the next
prestige camp, a new genre.
Just be, prestige camp. Maybe that's
I
a
don't
new
know
genre.
If I, but I feel like for the cultural context of Cats, it's not going like, oh, what a camp classic, because no one's going like, oh, that's so funny. No one's ever said Cats is funny. Like no one thinks about Cats and goes, oh, Teehee, so funny when he like drops that pie or whatever, like what happened in like a camp comedy or whatever.
But how could you not? Like unless you saw this as a child where it would, I think it would be completely like life altering and defining.
Yeah.
I don't know how you couldn't, even if you're emotionally invested, there's still a part of your brain that's going, I'm watching Cats.
Yeah, I think because this has become so successful as like one of the most successful musical theater pieces of all time, if not the most, that I think that it doesn't leave in people's minds going like, you know, the same way there's something like La Cage aux Folles or like
or
the Birdcage.
Or even Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Yeah.
Like you think it's transcended camp.
I think it's transcended camp because you're not thinking of it the same way where you're like, oh, that's funny or like that's so weird. People just like, oh yeah, it's Cats. It's like ubiquitous when you talk about musicals. It's like that and like Fiddle on the Roof or...
But I think that if Cats is not considered camp by people, it's only because it's been around so long that people are just immune to the campness of it. And maybe the movie has reminded everyone of how actually insane this is.
I think the trailer was the moment when everyone realized how insane it was.
Yeah.
The first trailer drop. Up until then, I hadn't really heard much about it. I knew it was happening. But then when that first trailer dropped, it was almost like the world went, oh, yeah, this was a bad idea. What? What were we thinking? Yeah. Why did we allow this?
That was, I know why, because Tom Hooper loved directing Les Mis so much. He was like, that was such a great creative experience to adapt something and adapt a musical and make these beautiful production, beautiful numbers. And I think that, yeah, he is the right guy to do Les Mis. I don't remember that movie very well, but like, I think he has this aesthetic for like capturing like this, that prestige grandeur that just like it works. Yeah. But something like Les Mis where he's like this serious text and like he can do, I think his movies always have really nice lighting. Like I love the lighting in like the King's Speech and the set design for that. And I think that he was able to capture that with Les Mis. And the reason he did Cats was he was like, I wanted to do another musical. I want to do another musical. I was the first one to adapt Les Mis, the musical, for the big screen. And like, what's the other iconic one? And this was the first one that came up. He's like, okay, I'll do Cats because it's the only other humongously iconic musical that's never been done for the big screen. Where if he had done, you know, even though he's not Jewish or anything, but if he'd done Fiddle on the Roof, I'm like, I can see that movie in my head. It makes sense. You know, freaking Josh Gad will get Oscar nominated for it or something. Like that makes sense.
Or even Phantom. Like he could, I think he could still do high camp. I think Phantom would be lush and, you know, delicious purple curtains.
Yeah. And get the theatrical velvet. Camp. Yeah. Whereas I think this isn't theatrical camp. This is like, unidentifiable camp.
So I think we might be tapping into why you were bored in this movie. And I think that's because, everything's crazy except the direction in this movie visually. Obviously the effects and the set design is crazy, but I think like the way it's staged and the way it's shot is like anything.
Yeah.
Could be anything.
It could be anything. Like it's like, you know, I don't even.
Who do you think? Baz Luhrmann?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Baz Luhrmann's Cats. That's a good point.
And also Baz Luhrmann could do anything. It would be like, I don't even particularly like Baz Luhrmann, but I'm like, yeah, that's a camp director. If he just makes everyone in costumes like that. Who directed Priscilla?
Stephen Elliott.
Yeah, Stephen Elliott. He could crush it, I think.
Yeah, right.
Or,
only Australians.
Only Aussies. Only Aussies could do with this.
So far, only Aussies know the text.
Who are the great musical directors of our time? You know, Clint Eastwood doing Jersey Boys. He could do this.
Didn't Joel Schumacher do Phantom of the Opera?
Oh, Schumacher did, with Jared Butler and Emmy Rossum. He would crush this. Schumacher would really, I think, because he's like, this would be Batman Forever or Batman and Robin, his version of this.
So, Alexi, now that you've watched the stage version, which version do you prefer?
I'm really torn because I think there's things in the film does to adapt the musical that I'm like, now I go like, great, you figured something out. Like that makes total sense, that choice now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or things like that. But I feel like I was less bored during watching the musical because I think like this one is like, oh, there is some brilliant choreography. I always find it fun. But it's like that first acting lesson thing that you would do in high school where they're like, oh, to find this character, why don't you put an animal in your head and embody that animal? And so I always find that fun to just see actors do that because it's like, how do they interpret what a cat is? And this one, they're all like, oh, cats love to fuck or something. From watching this one, all the cats love to fuck or...
They're always running their hands slowly up their bodies, lingering on their genitals.
I think this one is like, you know, it's less disturbing in a way to have the textural practicality of this to like go like, oh yeah, cool. They're wearing a little lycra suit or whatever. Whereas I think in the filmed version, the cinematic version, I think the costuming doesn't work because it's just like, it's like this digital paint that they're wearing. Mm. And it's kind of like, oh, I think the textures really matter. Like in the movie, the only ones that feel successful are like, you know, Judi Dench or Ian McKellen or even Dick Grisabella because they're just wearing a giant coat over some weird fleshy. I don't know. But like, I think that I'm really torn because I think there's choices in the movie to adapt it that now makes sense to me. That's not plot wise, like there's no plot still, but like I kind of predicted this going back that I was like, watching the movie, I'm like, what's the point of that ingenue character, Victoria, this played by the ballerina? Mm-hmm. I was like, I will be not shocked if when I watch the Broadway production, if that character's not in it at all. And it would just be the characters introducing themselves to the audience because that's the whole thing. And then she's not. She's like a background
character. She's not in it, yeah. Well, yeah, you're right. There is a white cat who does the ballet parts, but she's not the lead. We are.
But the movie needs an audience point of view character. Yeah. Yes. Like you need someone guiding us through this insanity.
Because I think like if in a theatrical production, you're sitting there, you know something's going to happen in front of you. Mm. But I think with movie musicals, like there's this thing that Cameron and I have talked a lot about when we've had to cover musicals in our show.
Sing it for me.
It's my favorite word. It's a word called merm.
Have you heard of merm?
You ever heard merm? Mm. Let me tell you.
Yeah. This guy tell you.
Musically enhanced reality mode, which is the moment in musicals where people go from talking was like, oh, well, you know, I don't really know, but I guess I don't really know about anything. I don't know. You know, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that, you know, you don't need that in a theatrical production because it's like, it's just people singing. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Like you can just, you don't need to be braced for it.
Yeah.
But then like in a movie musical, you need to have those moments. And because this movie, they don't have any text, like there's no time where there's just dialogue. They don't have that merm. Like you're just thrown immediately into it. So you're just like, oh, this is fucking wild.
Yeah, yeah. That's the most discombobulating thing about the film is that, yeah, there is every song bleeds directly into the next song and they're also tonally different and musically styled in a completely different genre of music that it's that aggressive kind of, but I thought the watching the West End musical would make some sense of the movie. Mm. I'm more confused by the West End musical. To me, it's more perplexing than the movie is.
And we complained about this when we watched the movie. We complained about the fact that there's no exposition.
Mm.
there fucking is compared to this original version.
Yeah.
They've added
a novel's
stuff
worth
in
of
there.
Exposition.
They've added at least six lines in that movie that just sum up what's happening a little bit.
Yep.
You know, there's a bit where at the start of the movie where Victoria goes like, but what are Jellicle cats? And then the guy goes, well, I'll tell you. And then he sings another song that doesn't explain what they are. But at least we know she doesn't know either.
Yeah.
And then there's a bit later where they're making the Jellicle choice and it's very apparent that this is a contest.
Yes.
Yep.
Where the winner gets to go forward to the next level of existence. Whereas in this fucking play, no one says jack shit. So we've talked about a little bit of the differences. Here's one thing that's the same in both that shocked me to my core. There's a moment in the
I know exactly what you're going to talk about.
There's a moment in the movie.
This is a real core shock moment.
Jenny Any Dots unzips her own fur to reveal more fur underneath it with like a little song and dance bikini on.
Yep.
That happens in the fucking play as well.
Yeah.
I thought that was a Tom Hooper choice. That was a funny like Police Academy style joke or something.
It'd be so funny if Tom Hooper's humor is described as Police Academy esque. Oh, I just love the Police Academy movies.
But that's canon.
Yeah.
That's canon. That happens on the West End. That blew my mind. I can't believe that's part of the text of Cats.
And it's better in the theatrical version. Because you got the texture of it. She's wearing like one weird raggedy Jabba the Hutt giant, like bustier. Like, I think she looks like a clay vase. Like, she's got this weird butt on it, and she's very like big in it. It is, when she's lying down, it's very Jabba the Hutt, very, very much so. Mm. And when she peels it off, she's just got a normal fluffy cat underneath. And it's like, okay, that makes sense. But to take it off, it's almost exactly the same. The Rebel Wilson one, it's like, oh, no.
It's as grotesque. That whole number is as grotesque. When those mice, because the mice in the movie are the most disturbing part of the movie. Children's faces grafted on little mice. But in the West End musical, they look like a cross between Spy versus Spy. And you know when the Black Plague was going around, the doctors wear those long masks full of like sage and rosemary. They look like that. They're just these awful long-faced paper mache mice.
But also it's just the other, like the core. Chorus cats, we're going to play another character. Let's chuck on this mouse head and wear that now. But in the movie as well, that's the mice disturb me because the scale was so off.
And why like are they children?
They're children, they're little bubs in there. Children should not be allowed on set on this thing. This is like a 40, like a 2 hour sex scene that's highly disturbing. The kids should not be allowed on set here.
$150 million porno flick. Yeah.
This is the new Caligula. This movie. But it's like the scale is so off because it's like, oh, okay, we have to suspend our disbelief because these are humans that are now the size of cats, roughly. They're like, I mean, they have
their
bodies.
They're the size of bananas.
What are you talking?
I don't. Yeah. So
are you talking in the movie?
In the movie. Yeah, yeah, so yeah, in the movie, no, it's yeah. like the size. But they're like proper human movie physical, but then the size of cats have been shrunk down, but everything's been made bigger, like a Gulliver's Travel type thing. And it's like, for the most part, like, yeah, I believe this, I perceive it. But then the mice are to the cats in the movie the size of what mice are to us.
Yeah.
So
they should be up to her hips, but they're up to her ankles.
And the cockroaches are bigger than the mice.
The cockroaches are bigger than the mice. So the mice for the cats should be more the size of, like, if I'm a cat in the movie, it should be the size of a child, which then makes sense. Oh, it's interesting that the child is playing this. That makes sense because the height should be the same for the size between a mouse and a cat. But then it's like, no, shrink it down. It's a mouse. So they're the size of like a louse. They're like lice. The mice are like these little, like it's the size of a ladybug to a cat.
They're the size of grapes.
It would be like if I would walk into a room and I saw a grape on the ground and go, that's a mouse! That's a mouse! So I think that, like, that's, to me, I can't understand what the decision there was because there's so much work that would have to go into, like, oh, we got to create these digital characters because they can't be in the same scene as the, as I don't understand when like, oh yeah, make him the size of a normal mouse. Was that like a miscommunication that made it $100 million to the screen? Like they couldn't change at any point.
Well, that's kind of what I was saying to Ben last week, was that I have to believe this is all deliberate because there's many gatekeepers.
Yep. Yes.
That you're going through when you're making a movie of this scale. Like, that would have been called out in the storyboarding.
There would have been some studio exec who's just like, no, they're mice. They've got to be small.
Make them small.
Make them small. People are going to be scared. If it was people in costumes, I think you could buy all of that stuff.
Yep.
Like it's people in costumes, you believe it, but because it's like this weird digital skin.
Tell us about it with the West End version that we just watched. How did you find the scale of that? There's a few
I was not bothered by
proppy moments with a shoe that's like half the size of
a cat. Yeah, but I didn't. None of that bothered me at all. And then there's the shoe box is not as big to fit the shoe box in to fit the shoe in that we saw earlier. I'm like, I don't give a shit. This is like someone had to make this stuff. You had to see to make.
So
it.
So when you can see it, you buy it more. You respect it more, or something.
I respect it. I'm like, I have full respect. I look up to this.
You respect the artistry.
I respect it, dude. I'm like, yeah, you go, oh, respect.
Buyakasha. The one thing in the West End production that I think was a travesty they didn't put in the movie was the number where the cats all dress up as dogs.
Oh, yeah.
And mock, you know, the behaviorisms of dogs.
Yeah.
And they're all wearing like socks for ears.
They got like a Clark shoe on their head.
Yeah, shoe to simulate the snout. Like it's just, they're very yucky. But to have seen that in full digital Tom Hooper glory would have been
really. Well, it made us both ask the question, like, what would the dogs have looked like in the movie version of this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do dogs have hands?
Because you hear that dog running up and like scratching at the door, but they don't show it because I'm just like, I reckon Tom Hooper's either like, I haven't decided what they look like, or is like, I know what it looks like.
And scared. You don't want to see what it looks like.
You don't want to see the dog.
You don't want to see it, trust me.
The dog's four guys.
The dog is a human centipede.
I want to do good.
The dog is a human centipede in this universe. You can't see it.
But if there's mice, roaches, and cats that are all humanoid, then the assumption is that all animals in this dimension. I want the Google Zoom where we zoom out on London and see the entire. I want to see birds. Yeah. The birds have hands at the end of their fucking wings,
like man bat style.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
No.
it's, I don't know, like the movie, it's so like, I think the, I did in, I don't know if enjoy is the right word, but this I liked more, the, because it's like the spectacle of it all. You're seeing people dance, you're seeing, I like the music. I actually like the music of Cats. I like the sounds of it. They're pleasing to me.
This is a great description of music.
I like the sounds.
The sounds make, are pleasing to me. The vision is upsetting.
What did you think of the songs in it?
I liked the songs.
All of them?
No.
In order, rank them.
Rank them. I think Memory is beautiful. I think, but that's also because it's not from this. Like, it's not in the same tone as any other song. They just get some old biddy to come in.
It's like an Aviva song or something.
Well, I feel like it was a song that was written separately.
Yeah, so it's story not. Goes. It's not in tone. Can you tell us a bit how?
Well, I think that exists? It was a melody and a chord progression that existed prior to this, and then when they were in pre-production on the play, maybe the West End play. One of the producers, or one of the, you know, investors or whatever. I imagine everything like the producers, the Mel Brooks, where it's like some really stressed out, like balding guy comes in and goes like, we haven't got a hit song. We need a hit. So it's kind of like that. Like someone came in and said, you actually need a torch song. We need something that everyone's going to be singing when they leave. And I believe Andrew Lloyd Webber, well, I got this idea, like this old banger. And then they just applied it to one of the poems from the book.
Yeah.
And people loved it. Apparently he called everyone around and said, remember where you were when you heard this melody.
About his song, he said it.
I don't know if he said it. I hope so. Wouldn't that be great if he said that about his own song?
Now, guys, sit back. You're going to remember this one.
We said that about this podcast, though. Sit back, take a look around. Remember where you were when you first heard What Is Cats. It's probably the one song that should exist from this musical.
I found it interesting in the West End that there's kind of like a Greek chorus that sing about the cat rather than in the movie, every cat is singing about themselves.
They get a
That's
solo.
True.
Like James Corden as Bustopher Jones is saying, I'm a fat cat. Whereas it's the chorus in the
West End musical.
Yeah, the cat not singing for itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Though I don't really understand what the point of it is. There's even a whole bit where Rum Tum Tugger sings Mr. Mistopheles' song.
Yes.
And if you were just a normal person who hadn't seen this movie three times now, you would be sitting in the audience of this play going, okay, is this guy Mr. Mistopheles? Yeah, I thought he was the cat.
But it's like, it's also like, I don't get it now. Like the movie makes it clear. It's like what I thought it was. I thought it was a singing competition. Whoever can sing the best song and story, best performance, they get to go up to Jellicle Heaven or whatever, the Jellicle Moon. I don't know where they go, but I know they get
heavy side layer.
They ascend somewhere. But this one, it's now it's
euthanizing
like
ward at the vet. That's where they go.
But now it's like everyone else is singing for their song. So it's like what is this now? Like, because in this version, it's like, yes, the Greek chorus come and sing the song where they're like, oh, Mr. Mistopheles is a beautiful cat or whatever. And then like Mr. Mistopheles is just dancing around. Why does Mr. Mistopheles deserve to go to heaven? Because they all like him and they can sing his song? or is it like, oh, he's got the great story, he can go up? Because Mr. Mistopheles just can do electric power. And it's not like
that's pretty sick, like, that's man. Pretty he shoots amazing. Lightning bolts out of his fingers.
He's a Palpatine.
In the movie, all he does is produce flowers. Like, come on.
Mistopheles Palpatine has got these beautiful powers, but it's like, I don't know it's not a talent show anymore. I don't know what this is.
I think but they all perform while they're being sung about. You know, Mr. Mistopheles does magic. Bustopher Jones just sits there and eats shit while they sing about him.
But he doesn't even really eat that much. He just like goes, yes, I have memories of eating.
And curls his moustache. It's definitely not as fucking horrific as James Corden's portrayal of the character. Yeah,
that's one of the other things from the movie. It's like James Corden, I've gone on the record many times, I do not like the guy, okay?
Come on, he's so lovable.
No, I'm sorry. This is me as a critic talking.
You're a fucking coward to disown the movie. If this had been a fucking success, James Corden would have been the first one. Oh, it's just such an honor to be in Cats.
Yeah.
But because no one likes Cats, oh, I haven't even seen it. Bullshit. You fucking coward.
He is that fucking guy, though. That's
just
him.
The worst.
Because he's always like, listen.
Simpering fucking. I can't believe I'm meeting Tom Cruise.
He's like,
I never believed fucking, it.
He like is, every time he acts, it's like he makes fucking high school actor decisions. If he was a child actor, we'd be like, oh, he's okay. But the guy's like near 40 years old. And he has the same. He's got less talent than fucking Macaulay Culkin or even Alex D. Lynch from Home Alone 3. He has more talent than him. And he's like, he makes these shit simple decisions. But also, guy's a fucking fat cunt hypocrite. And yes, by the way, I myself am a fat cunt. I have the authority to say this. I'm fat. I can fucking say this shit, okay? So he, this year, or last year, 2019, the guy,
so did, glad
the guy got bullied by Bill Maher gently or whatever.
But he didn't. All Bill Maher did was do a thing on Real Time about how there shouldn't be a fat pride movement because being morbidly obese is bad for your health. He didn't say anything about James Corden.
He didn't say James Corden. No. I thought he said James Corden.
He didn't say you shouldn't be obese like James Corden.
James Corden. I heard that
he just said, don't fucking be proud of being fat because your fucking heart's under a lot of stress and you should lose some weight.
The way that I understood was Bill Maher was on SNL and burned a picture of James Corden. That's what I understood. He ripped it up.
He made a model of James Corden out of meat and blew it up.
So he gets that fucking criticism and he makes like this tearful, emotional, well put together video of him going like, oh, fat shaming's bad. I'm like, yeah, okay,
it's
good on
you.
He's making a stand. The guy's got some scruples. And then I fucking see this shit. And I'm trying to do the math watching the movie. He did that in September. So when was this being filmed? It's like within the same few months, the guy has no scruples whatsoever. The guy is singing, oh, I'm a fat cat. I love to fucking eat cream and suck on his turkey.
And the way he's eating, the way they depict his eating in the film is pornographic. Yes. He's not just eating. It's like, you know those videos you see of like people putting funnels in their mouth and pouring like 3 liters of fucking Ben and Jerry's down it? And it's like they're gagging and it's like spraying out of their nose.
Videos?
Have you ever seen these feeding videos?
What are these
it's a phenomenon on the internet, feeding. Like people pay large women to eat a fucking wedding cake. But it's that level. Like there is literally an overhead scene of his face as cream and milk is pouring into his face and he's spluttering and I'm very fat. And you have the audacity to go on TV. Oh, Bill Maher shouldn't be fat shaming. You have done more to shame fat people in this 2 minutes of cats than fucking Bill Maher ever could.
Some poor kid is going to be in theater class and some fucking boy's going to come up to him. He's like, oh, you fucking
Buster.
This is the first time since fucking Augustus Gloop of music was ruined fat kids' lives, okay? And it's all fucking James Corden's fault. Fucking fat piece of shit. But let me just put an addendum on that. Yeah, I said that as a freaking critic, okay? As a comedian, I have the utmost respect for James Corden. I put my critic hat on to say I will never shit on another comedian, but that was me. And he's one of the great comics.
he was asked what he thought of Cats and he said, I haven't seen it, but I hear it's very bad.
Coward.
What do you think of that?
I heard that he said, I haven't seen it, but it tasted fucking great.
The catering was wonderful.
But do you think it makes any sense?
No.
Like, do you think it makes any coherent sense at all?
No,
like,
not
what do you
all.
Think it means?
Yeah, now that you've watched both of them, like, what would you say is happening in this story?
Well, the story.
First of all, would you call it a story?
Yes, it's a story. I wouldn't say it's a plot. The difference between story and plot is very evident in Cats.
What is the difference between story and plot?
A plot is like from A to B to C. A story can be like
what's happening. Story is why it's happening.
Yeah, why it's happening, or like the world, the atmosphere, and all that stuff. Story's character. Plot is just like this is where we go. This is how we get there and stuff. So I think this is very rich in story.
Well, go on. Tell us
it's
the like, story.
It's all about this beautiful universe. It's about the Jellicle universe where the beautiful Jellicle cats, it's like their time to shine now that the sun has gone down. And they do a little dance to impress each other. I don't know.
But what do you think it's actually about?
What it's trying to say?
Yeah, like, you know, the wrestler's about a wrestler, but it's also about other things. Yeah. Like, what's Cats about?
I think Cats is about the stories that one would put onto an animal. Like when you see a dog, you're like, oh, what have you been up today? Well, you can't answer me. Allow me to close my eyes and imagine. I think it's trying to like bring the magical realism to a practical world, because like this could be gnomes. Like this could be like about like little gnomes or something.
Borrowers.
It could be about borrowers. It could be like a complete fantasy where it's like not magical realism, but fantasy where it's like, oh, okay, yeah, we're seeing the gnomes trying to fuck the fairies or something, or like whatever Ferngully is or something. But because it's about the real animals, I think it's about trying to capture the imagination and magic of our real world, because like we don't know what cats do when the lights go out.
So it's like Toy Story, but for
like
cats.
A Toy Story kind of thing. Yeah, I think that's what it is, where it's like trying to bring the magic into our reality by going like, yeah, cats love to fuck each other. And
what happens when we're not looking at cats? What do they like? How do they interact? Mm. So, well, that is what the Book of Poems is. Yeah. Did you know that?
Not really.
Well, it's based on a book of poetry by T.S. Eliot. Called Old Possum's Book of Cats. That was his nickname for himself.
Practical Cats.
He called himself Old Possum.
He called himself Old Possum.
Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats.
Oh, come on, dude. This is the most respected author of all time. Old Possum.
From what I understand, it's a poem of basically doggerel verse, nonsense rhymes, written for children, written for his niece and nephew.
Man, English people are so weird, because you know, when he signs off a letter, it would be like, love from Old Possum.
He used to sign off Old Possum. Anyway, so what you've just described is what he was doing for his niece and nephew. He wrote these poems about his own cats where he would go, look, this is what Rumpelteazer and Mungo Jerry are like. They're little criminals and they sneak around stealing shit.
Yeah.
So you think that that's what the point of this play and movie is about, is that it's about making us become children wondering what cats are like.
To capture that magic in our reality. Well, what else
is it? It's too horny for that. There's too much sex all over
kids. Now you make it for adults as well. So it's like, oh yeah,
need some for mummy and daddy in there.
Yeah, exactly.
But that kind of raw animalistic sexuality is not a part of childhood.
I just don't think that's on the page at all. I think if we open up Old Possum's Book of Practical Cats,
they're not fucking each other.
It's not going to be in brackets.
Judy Dench isn't rubbing one out over Rum Tum Tugger. Like,
he's naked, by the way.
So he's spraying musk all over the place.
Old Possum's got his little grandkids, like, and then Rum Tum Tugger sings his beautiful song, and he's loves to go around and tell the other cats what to do. And then later, he starts sucking a little fucking dick.
Grinding his barbed penis. Yuck.
I think that's what was added by Andrew Lloyd Webber. He added his sexuality to it, because I guess Phantom's got a kind of like twisted sexuality in there as well.
Yeah, but that's a human sexuality. it's that thing of like, I can't remember who said it when we were watching it, but it was the disconcerting thing about it is 1 minute there, acting sexually like a human, and then suddenly it turns into a feline movement, and it's very like
it blurs the line.
Yeah, it's not sexy. It's deeply upsetting. Yeah.
It's sexual.
It's sexual, but it's not a sexual party that I want to be invited to. You know what I mean? You know, like if you watch Hair or something, you'd be like, yeah, fuck, they're all naked and this is hot. Even Jesus Christ Superstar has a sexuality to it.
Mm.
But this is, you know, that kind of the Bestial thing it's a turn off.
What about for you, Lex?
Yeah, of course. I'm not fucking turned off by this thing. But I think the sexuality is maybe part of the charm for some people, I guess, but not in like a way where it's like, oh, it's erotic. It's like, oh, that's a bit naughty. You know, like this is, I think it's like the way that's using sexuality is to kind of create that naughtiness for adults as well. Cause like if it's just some boring shit about like, oh, this is what cats do when we're not looking. It's like adults are like, no, thank you. But if you make it a little sexy, then it makes it naughty for adults as well.
Mm.
Whereas like if this was just for kids and then they're like sniffing each other's ass doing this, they're like, kids are like, this is illegal. You're going to go to jail.
You're right. Without the sexuality, it would just be a pantomime play for children.
Yeah,
it doesn't have like that it really sneaky.
Would. Yeah. It'd be Blue's Clues. Even the I read some character descriptions of these characters between this week and last, and they describe
he's a cat.
Rum Tum Tugger is a curious cat.
Well, they describe Rum Tum Tugger as a cat that's had a lot of lovers.
Mm.
But where's that? That's not said anywhere.
It's just it's not even.
It's not like there's a line in the song where he's like, I fucked a lot of cats and I came everywhere or whatever. Like he just sings about rats and houses and shit.
Mm.
That's just something that would have been in the playbill. Like yeah. this is it's all stuff that Andrew Lloyd Webber has added to it. 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 Like this is all stuff that Andrew Lloyd Webber has. Lloyd Webber. God.
I think the movie's vastly superior.
I think so too. And I'll tell you why. I think it's because that Idris Elba McCavity character
yep.
is a thread and a threat yes. throughout the movie yes.
yep.
where we're being told that he's someone who disappears cats and yep. kidnaps them.
Yep.
So that's a threat throughout the whole film. McCavity, first of all, he's barely in the play.
He doesn't have a line and he doesn't appear in his own song.
He doesn't even sing or, yeah, he doesn't even appear on stage during his own song. No.
Yeah.
Crazy.
He's not. He just pops up at the end.
And he only steals Old Deuteronomy. In the movie, he's constantly stealing all the yeah. cats to narrow the field so McCavity. He can win.
McCavity!
And disappearing in a puff of fairy dust.
Oh. Yeah, I think you're right. I think
have plenty of soul.
That element... in fact, all the story stuff
yeah.
made way more sense mm. in the movie. You're right, these cats are getting disappeared to like this dock where Ray Winston is as well.
Menacing them.
They're all getting chained up. And then at the end, Mr. Mistopheles has to bring them all back
because yeah.
they've all been taken away.
Mm-hmm. And so that provides some to Mistopheles, stakes. Yes.
Man. So yeah, you're right. That's the only bit of plot. In fact, when it got to the Mr. Mistopheles song,
yeah.
we were all like, it feels like the play is just starting. Something yeah. has finally happened.
The inciting incident comes in 1 hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah. yeah okay, all right. Old Deuteronomy's gone. They need Mr. Mistopheles to do a yeah. trick to bring him back. Yeah. That happens 10 minutes from the end. It yeah. shouldn't. That should happen at the start or yeah. something should.
Yeah. Something should, at least in the movie that's like, oh, we got a new cat that's going to be thrown out of the car. And now it's like, oh, well, this yeah. gives us a reason for us to all talk to you and let's explain our beautiful world and our heritage, our cultural heritage as Jellicles. And now you're one of us. And it's like, in this version, it's like, it just happens.
It's just coming at you.
Yeah.
There's nothing guiding you through it. It's just.
It's been weird to see like some of our friends and colleagues go like, I love cats. I grew up on it. Like, you should be embarrassed by it.
No. I was saying to you guys, I saw Phantom of the Opera
mm.
live when I was 11 or 12 and it like splintered my reality.
Mm.
It was unbelievable. But I feel like if I'd never seen it at 11 and yeah. did what we did and just watched the Blu-ray of it, yeah. I would be like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah,
but I will
yeah.
always love it because yeah. of that formative experience. And conversely, had I seen Cats at 12,
you'd be like a furry.
I don't know how a 40-year-old... person who works in an office
yeah.
sits down for the first time and watches Cats and walks out going, holy fuck, that was just the best thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's like, I can understand them walking out enjoying it.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, that was crazy, but not like
yeah.
I was so moved because there's nothing really to yeah. hold on
it's
to.
It's impenetrable.
Well, yeah. what's it about?
yeah, exactly. Like,
who are these cats?
The only two moments.
Like at the end they say, now you know everything you need to know. It's like, I know nothing.
Yeah.
I have an infinity of questions.
I'm dumber having watched this now. But I think the only two moments where it allows an emotion to build because it makes them human. Like the only two times that makes them a human relatable character is Grisabella singing Memory
mm-hmm.
and Gus the theater cat no. where it's like,
nah.
where it's
hated
like
that.
I hated it.
Nah.
I hated
with
it.
With his varicose vein.
It's a movie. I think Ian McKellen is truly transcendent in the movie.
But again,
I think
he delivers his monologue. In yes. the play, he's not delivering his monologue. It's the Greek chorus saying, yes. oh, this is Gus and he's old.
And they've got this ancient man.
he's got he's Parkinson's sitting down. Disease.
He's really trembling. The guy's got the trembles and he doesn't really talk and he just looks very sad-eyed.
He's got the bends.
Yeah. He's got these like glassy eyes and he's like staring at
you. You know when you see an old man sitting at the bus stop and his eyes are wet and you look at them and you go, he doesn't know what he's doing here. He doesn't know what bus he's waiting for, how he even got
here. He doesn't know what year
he's going to. He's like thinking about the war or something, just like remembering shit. Those are the only times because it's like he's not a cat. Gus the theater cat, not a cat. He's an old man.
He's an old
man.
He's an old theater actor regretting every decision that led to this moment.
It's like Grisabella is like an old lady that got fucking tossed around or whatever.
Yeah.
And those are the only times where it's like, oh, I can see being moved by those, but I can't imagine even the other emotional songs being moved by them because it's not real.
Real. We're when Grisabella wins at the end, there's not even an announcement that she wins. No. All the cats just start rubbing their faces all over her body.
Yeah.
And she goes up a lightning bolt staircase and it's implied that
never
she's-
Never seen again.
Never seen again. At least in the movie, Judy Dench, you are my jellicle choice.
Exactly.
Well, Benny, have you ever heard of Show Don't Tell? Well, could have made it more clear when all the cats rub their fucking face up her ass and stuff. Who did it better? Who did memory better? Jennifer Hudson or Jennifer Hudson. Elaine Page?
I got to say Jennifer Hudson too. And Elaine Page is the iconic Grisabella. Yeah. Like that's the one people know and love. Yeah.
Jennifer Hudson moved me so, like it wasn't for long because you couldn't be moved for too long before you remember that you're watching a nightmare. But up until when she sings that song, we've been watching it for what, like an hour and a half and like howling with laughter. And when she hits that key change in memory, like my whole body was goosebumping.
Yeah.
I was genuinely like, whoa, that is an incredible, incredible performance. But then, you know, but whatever. You remember Idris Elba's fucking dickless naked body. And
oh my God. Old dichotomy of cats.
Yeah, what do you think?
I agree, I think, because I think like this is a great performance by her. I think the costume's really good for Grisabella in this because she it is the one that like balances human and cat in a really good way. She's just got this old yuck coat on and these yuck gloves and her hair's all a mess and then like the top of her hair forms like the shape of ears. But she also does look more Cowardly Lion or more mouse. Like it reads as mouse or reads as Cowardly Lion. And I don't know. I think it works as like,
oh. She look like a mouse to me. She's bigger than a grape. She's banana size. This woman's a little banana size.
She's at least the size of a freaking rock melon or something. I don't know. She's like grape. But I think, but Jennifer Hudson, I think she is all too good for the movie because she brings it to, she brings like all this reality and soul to the character, whereas everyone else is like this pantomime character.
Yeah.
It's like you're watching like, it's like if you're at home watching Austin Powers and then there's a scene where Jenna Rollins from The Woman Under the Influence comes in like tearing everything apart. It's like, doesn't make sense. It's not camp.
Yeah. It's like, just it's like, too good for the vehicle that it's in.
Well, just too real.
Well, here's the
too real. Yeah.
After we decided to make this podcast, a friend of ours, Sophie Braham, she reached out and said that she'd met Rebel Wilson, and she asked Rebel Wilson what Cats was like. This is before it came out, and Rebel said it's really good. Jennifer Hudson will win an Oscar for this role.
Wow,
it is the performance of someone who is swinging for an Oscar, but.
Yeah, but
it's a wild swing.
You've got like a giant bright yellow rivulet of mucus flowing out of your nose through the entire song.
I just don't. Do you think it's the type of performance that would ever get taken seriously for awards?
I think.
No, she's wearing digital cat face. It's ridiculous.
I think that on paper, yes. Because
not even on paper. No, what are you talking about?
I'm going to go back to my theory that Cats is not known as like this weird camp classic. People go, it's like, oh, it's an iconic. It's an iconic role. And people. I know like this song so well.
Only people that don't know it.
Yeah, but who know? Not everyone knows. I've never seen it before.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think, and I know what it is. Like I've seen that it's weird cat people. So I'm like, but it's like, I think on paper, Jennifer Hudson already has won an Oscar for supporting actress for Dreamgirls.
Yeah.
And that's because she knocks out of the park, like one of the iconic contemporary musical songs ever. And then in this one, it's the same thing again. She's like, you have a small role, but I'm the one singing Memory, which is the iconic song. Of course it's the Oscar role in this movie. Yeah. Like who else is it going to be? Jason Derulo? Like it's the only Oscar role, you know?
I think that what they were gearing for was the Anne Hathaway Les Mis vibe.
Absolutely.
But the difference is, you know, it's like revolutionary France, her teeth are all blacked out. She's fucking
shaved
her
head or whatever.
Yeah. Like she looks like a mess and she's weeping and the camera's going down her throat, but it's appropriate to the set and setting of this film. Like that, and that outpouring of emotion. Yeah. She's had her child taken away. She's fucking had to sell her hair. Like everything's turned to shit for this character. You don't get that journey with Grisabella. She shows up now
she's
and then going, and all the other cats. And you don't even really know why. Yeah. It's maybe suggested that she was working for McCafferty at some point.
Yeah.
But McCafferty seems all right.
But they all hate her.
Yeah, they hate her. And they don't hate McCafferty as much as they hate Grisabella.
Yeah.
Well, they're scared of McCafferty.
Yeah, all right, fair enough.
But
so you don't get that journey with Grisabella. So by the time memory hits, yes, it is moving in isolation of like,
in isolation, like
a fucking good Susan Boyle performance would be, where it's like, oh yeah, she's hitting the notes.
Did you just say it because she looks like Susan Boyle?
but then. The moment's not earned. Mm. I don't know why she's so miserable. I mean, other than you've told me that, Grisabella's miserable, but I've not seen her journey.
Yeah, because I think this song is meant to distill what her journey has been, or to just kind of emote like, oh, this is the song of a woman that's had a hard life. And it's like, yeah, but we didn't see her. We don't, she's a cat, she's not a lady.
Yeah, she's a fucking cat.
I just remember this.
Cats. I know. That's the hard part, is you start getting deep into an analysis and then you realize you're talking about this fucking absurd, dart-ass nightmare. I'm going to ask you one more time before we go to summarize what you think this is about. You've said that you think it's about awakening the imagination.
Yes.
What do you feel about that? Do you stand by that? Child.
I think that is the intent of Cats. I think Andrew Lloyd Webber's intent was in the spirit of T.S. Eliot, but to update the text for adults. So to create the same, that same feeling of discovery that children would find of coming across something that is beyond their understanding. And the way to access that was Cats, to bring the magic realism to a place where kids can understand it in reality. So that when all these kids go and see a cat, they're going to be like, wow, that's got a beautiful secret life of like, you know, Rumton tugging it away or whatever.
That's a Gumby cat.
Yeah. For his grandkids to have that feeling of when they see all that stuff, to like go, the magic in the world, there is magic in this world. So, but I think Andrew Lloyd Webber's idea of taking that and then going like, how can I make this for adults? I'm going to make this the same feeling of like them walking into a world and discovering a world, and it's weird and sexy, and to make it spicy for adults, to create that same feeling of I'm discovering this whole new world. Because if it's just like, it needs to have that magic of that. And I think the only way to do that for adults is to make them extremely horny.
Thanks so much for joining us,
Thanks
Lex.
So much Thank for having you, me. I love you guys, and Godspeed for the rest of your journey.
That was the beautiful Greek baby, Alexi Toliopoulos. And honestly, I'm genuinely shocked that he didn't love this movie. I thought if anyone would love a batshit CGI horny nightmare, he'd be the guy. I'm shocked. If you want to hear more from Alexi, listen to Total Reboot with the both of us. We talk about movies, and follow him online at This Is Alexi. Join us next week, cats and kittens, as we dive deeper into the milk bowl with the help of a venerable goddamn litter of comedians. Some who grew up with cats, some who are witnessing it for the very first time. Will they feel the Jellicle love, or will they just fucking hate it? That's next week on Why Is Cats?
Why Is Cats is hosted by Cameron James and Ben Elwood for Sans Pants Radio, produced and edited by Sean Allen.
Yeah.